'Twas the night before Christmas vacation. And the fun was in full swing.
You have split our family onto two separate flights.
Mom!
Max, please!
The family left for their big vacation.
Is that everyone? The cars are leaving now!
But forgot one little thing.
Mom? Dad? Uncle Blake?
They don't even know I'm here. They don't even know I'm here.
You there, boy! What day's today?
Today, Governor. Why, today's the day that you're going to watch Home Sweet Home Alone.
That I didn't miss it. The spirits can do it all in one night. Of course they can.
Yes. Welcome back to the Bitter End podcast with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny.
And it's been nearly 4 years since our last episode.
Oh, yeah.
I looked it up, Tom. Our last episode was the Candyman season wrap-up in March 2022.
Jesus Christ.
Time of record, it is December 2025, and, oh, I'm older.
Yeah, I'm creaking, I'm leaking. It's not great, folks. But thankfully, you know, everything's great in the world.
There's a direct correlation, I think, if you look it up, between us stopping podcasting and everything going to shit.
Yeah, right? Yes. The was it the season before last was lockdown. And so anyway, the thing that has happened, some of you may remember, is that there is unfinished business. The Bitter End podcast, unfinished business. It's Home Alone. Home Alone season. When we did the Home Alone season, we watched all the homes that there were to alone. There's a new home, and someone's left it alone, namely us, because we haven't watched it. Home Sweet Home Alone.
It's going to be like when you were a kid and you had a Tamagotchi that you like forgot about in your drawer and then you try and load it up and it just killed itself from loneliness.
Yeah, little digital Kevin McAllister's dead. We're going to watch the film. We're finally going to do it, folks. For you, the people of the world, I don't know, whoever's still listening to whatever this thing is that we're doing. Home Sweet Home Alone. I keep on wanting to say Home Sweet Home Alone 2. I don't know why. It just feels right. So if I do that, fuck it. It doesn't, it's fine.
It's not a great title. I will say that. Home Sweet Home Alone.
I mean, it feels like the reason for doing that is probably because the series had been away for a very long time and they didn't want to just call it Home Alone 6. You know, when people come back with a very long overdue sequel or a legacy sequel or something. I'm surprised this isn't called Home Alone Legacy or Home Alone Legends or Home Alone Year One or whatever.
So you're saying that this creative property went away for a while, then came back with the word sweet added to it.
Yeah.
That reminds me, welcome everybody to the bittersweet end. Hey-o.
Perfect. Yes, we're doing our legacy sequel. We're older and more tired, and you thought that when this thing wrapped up that maybe we'd gone on to have fun lives, but now we've revisited and we've got to get the gang back together because we're miserable and we've got to teach some young people what to do. Well, no. My children are asleep. I have another child since we did this fucking podcast last.
He drove me here.
A whole, yeah.
He's old.
He's older than me. He caught up. So anyway, a little bit of context on the movie we are going to go and watch. As I said, yeah, Home Alone had been away for a while, and then this movie came out in 2021.
Whoa.
What things brought us to this? Well, a big company buying another big company happened.
You don't say.
So Disney acquired 20th Century Fox in, I want to say, 2019.
Okay.
You know, partly because, you know, capitalism and, you know, we've got to all get to eventually one big company that owns everything. But also because they were about to launch Disney Plus and they needed to buy a company with a big back catalogue that wasn't just kids' content.
Okay.
Of course, Fox had kids' content that had been sitting on the shelf, like Home Alone. And this just like was like the perfect thing to do, like in that era of the early streaming wars we've got to make exclusive content for streaming. Let's do a Home Alone film.
How could it possibly fail? Here we are 4 years later, and this is the only Christmas film people talk about.
I know, and I'm sure that it's absolutely fine that this film, that the production was halted midway through because of the pandemic.
I remember that.
I'm sure it's absolutely... This is coming to us from two of the three minds that wrote the David S. Pumpkin sketch.
I'm David Pumpkins, and I'm gonna scare the hell out of you. Any questions?
Any questions? Well, yes, I actually have several.
Yes, several questions. This is also directed by Dan Mazza, who is a guy I was not aware of before, because he principally collaborates and does a lot of more writing than directing with Sacha Baron Cohen on all of his dreadful characters.
Oh, no.
We've watched the trailer.
We have. Well, before we started watching the trailer, I wrote down some notes, some trope notes, some notes of tropes. I was trying to distill, while your son was driving me over here in the car, I had a little nap in the back while he was playing his rap music.
Yeah.
And I was kind of trying to determine what are the essential tropes of Home Alone? What are like the core things that Home Alone needs to have in order to still be Home Alone. I've boiled it down to three things, I think. Number one is that element of like kid wish fulfillment. Like what would you do if your parents weren't around and you could do whatever you wanted, basically. That's one. I think a second important element is Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it needs to be about that feeling of togetherness and all of that,
Was the third one setting it in South Africa and just putting a grey filter on it?
No, because that is, unfortunately, it's not.
Okay.
That is present in the most important one, of course, but not in all of them.
Yes.
No, the other one is traps. I think there need to be traps, right?
They do.
And when any one of those elements is underserved, then that's when we get a poorer Home Alone film.
Mm-hmm.
And when the three of those elements are in a perfect triangle, then that's when we have some of the very best ones. Now, this trailer, I think... The very first thing we see is snow.
Yes, tick.
The family getting ready for Christmas. Big tick for Christmas. We get a pretty big tick for wish fulfillment when the kid looks in the camera and says, my parents aren't here. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, right.
And then we also get maybe not some of the most creative traps I've ever seen, but we get some people falling over.
We get some people getting hurt. We get a guy, like a pool ball being like shot out of a Nerf gun into a dude's forehead.
Yes.
So you know, so I think it's going to be interesting to watch this and see how many confirmed kills there should be in if this existed in the real world.
Yes.
I mean, another thing, like a crucial element that makes the first two Home Alones work better than the others is your wet bandits, your baddies.
Your crooks. Well, some people need to be forced through those traps like sausage meat through a sausage grinder.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean, although, actually, I think Home Alone 5, you had Malcolm McDowell was a bit of, and the Crab Man. That was quite fun.
About that.
But like, we've got one of the baddies, the robbers, is Rob Delaney, who is, I really like him. Like, he, co-wrote and co-starred in the series Catastrophe, which is a like, great series.
I like Rob Delaney. He seems like a good guy. And it's interesting that in this one we have a pair of crooks that seem to be possibly a couple. We had that in one of the other films as well.
Yes, maybe that
part
was...
four, I think?
Four, where we had the dude from...
French Stewart.
French Stewart, yes. Yeah. And then his partner is I cannot remember the actor's name, but she was in the Unstoppable.
Kimmy Schmidt. Did she play Kimmy Schmidt?
She played Kimmy Schmidt. She's also got, you know, there was also like some whole like weird story about her being in a pageant that was heavily associated with the KKK in her teens. I don't know what came of that. That probably didn't help the promotion of this film, because I think that happened around the time that this came out.
Gosh.
Just putting that out there. I'm not saying anything. No one sue me. I'm not making any aspersions to anything one way or the other. Anyway, they're in it. Also, people in terms of people I like who are funny, the mum in this, Aisling B, she's an Irish comedian. She did the series This Way Up, which was really funny. She was in Living With Yourself, which was that series where like Paul Rudd cloned himself and she was playing Paul Rudd's wife, but she had nothing interesting to do. I'm worried that that's what they've done with her in this, where she's someone who's like very funny, and they'd be like, could you, instead of being like a funny Irish woman, be pretending to be quite a straight-buttoned Brit.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about the overall Britness of this because
I don't know. I'm being pretty worried about it.
I am not here to make fun of a kid, because if I do, your adult son will beat me up.
Right.
But this very British little boy that's being our Kevin McAllister, from the trailer alone, I'm getting kid that won a competition to get to be on the set of a film for a day. That's the vibe.
It doesn't quite have that same sort of like Macaulay Culkin zing.
No.
Right?
Or maybe it's got too much of that.
Maybe. I just think maybe this is something about like when you being Brits and then you like, you know, like we're surrounded by this accent all the time.
Oh
right?
God, it's maddening people.
But then when you see it on television, it's like, oh, that's not right. It's a bit like when we watch like television and films from America, and you become very, you know, like the American accent on TV and film feels relatively kind of like easy, like, you know, like, okay. And then you meet like you just like in the shops and there's like an American tourist there and it's like, oh my God. And you know, it's kind of like, there's something
amiss.
There's a cognitive dissonance going on. So, but anyway, we're going to find out how well this is. Now, Todd.
Yes,
you may have forgotten this, but we have to do an IMDb guessing game.
I've been doing nothing but guessing IMDb scores for the last 4 years,
Todd. Do you want some context for how the other films...
Yeah, please, if you could remind. And the years as well will be handy if you have.
Okay, I haven't written those down. Anyway, the first film got a 7.7 on IMDb, which is maybe the highest rated film we ever looked at for the podcast.
I watched that film this week. It's still pretty good.
Yeah, why not? And then the second one, 6.9. That's still...
I think that's fair.
That's still really a good solid score for a film that is definitely too long. The third film got a 4.6.
Mm.
That was the last cinematic release.
Mm.
Had a young Scarlett Johansson in it.
Yes, I remember. Speedy the Goldfish.
Yes, and then 4... the one that is shot in the deserts of South Africa with a grey filter on to make it look like snow, which I fucking love, got a 2.6.
Oh my
God. That was an absolute fucking dog's dinner. And then the fifth one got a 3.5, which I remember it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. It was set in Maine.
Yeah.
You know, with Stephen King. So what do you think?
For this one, I think it's going to be better. As you said, the pedigree of some of this cast is quite good. I also noticed it's got Pete Holmes in it, seems to be playing the dad. Now, I quite like Pete Holmes. When I first got into the concept of podcasts, one of the very first ones I ever listened to was Pete Holmes' You Made It Weird, which is has sort of really laid out the template for how I approach the medium of casted pods. So I'm really looking forward to having his voice back in my face.
The other thing, just quickly, the thing that I think we've nearly missed in this trailer is that it's got Buzz McAllister in it.
As a cop.
But they go to great pains to put a big close-up of his name tag saying McAllister.
Yes.
So it's like, it's the same universe, man.
Is it the same actor going to
it
be
is the same
oh, it
actor.
Is. That's
it is the same actor.
Gosh, some real
so they're throwing some stuff at it. You know, you've got one of the... This is written by one of the skeletons that stood next to David S. Pumpkins.
How can it be bad? Yes, the question is, what is the IMDb score? Yeah. And I'm going to guess that I think it is going to be bad, but I don't think it's going to be that bad. I'm going to say 5.2.
It's a 3.6.
Yoinks.
Yeah, that is just a scrape above the fifth one.
And we didn't mind the fifth one.
We didn't mind, but yeah, the impression I've got, I've really tried to avoid all knowledge of this film in case this ever happened.
Well, it seems like pretty much everybody on Earth avoided all knowledge of this film, because I don't think I've spoken to anyone that's seen it.
No, and I also kind of like, why would you? Like, grown-ups, people our age, you know, walking skeletons, like David S. Pumpkins, his friends, they aren't going to go and seek this out. I would maybe watch this, put this on with my kids, but then there are two better Home Alone films that I would put on.
Would have to be insane to be an adult and seek this film out.
Grown-ups go and watch the first two because of nostalgia, right? Mm. But I can't see, you know, maybe a few people would have, but like, it's also a direct-to-fucking-streaming thing that doesn't have, you know, if it had Macaulay in it, right, sure. So... the impression I get from people who have seen it, or just the internet vibe that is put out, is bad movie.
Bad movie.
But we'll see. We'll be the fucking judge of that, because we've watched a lot of shit that we've gone, could be worse.
Could be worse. Well, far be it from us to be choosy all of a sudden now that we're 4 years older. Listeners, thank you so much for coming back. Tom, would you like to dive into Home Sweet Home Alone?
Yes, please.
My name?
David S. Pumpkins!
Any questions?
Several. First of all, did we need really a new Home Alone film? No.
No, nobody needs it.
Does, weirdly, Home Sweet Home Alone have a arguably interesting riff on the Home Alone formula? Maybe.
Arguably,
but importantly, is it any good?
Well, the good news is we have a new worst Home Alone film.
They came out swinging. Oh, they did it. Thank you, corporate mergers. It's really bad.
It's so bad. And I feel baffled by why it is bad. The whole way through, H-Shar, as I like to abbreviate
as
it to.
As the kids call it, yeah.
H-S-H-A. The H-Char experience was me going, oh, I like him. Oh, I like her. That person's in something I like. Yeah. That person's in something I like. Constantly, pretty much every scene, except for the few scenes that have the little boy in,
yeah,
he's not in it very much, except for those, I like pretty much everybody in this movie. So why is it so fucking unbearable?
And, like, we were talking about this off mic, that, like, the script isn't terrible, like, it's not great by any means, but, like, it feels like sometimes you see something, it's like, I see the joke, I understand the joke is not awful, but it's landing far worse than it should.
Yeah.
And it also, like, what I kind of was alluding to is, like, the premise on this film is that, like, and the way it's framed, it does something that the other Home Alone films don't do, because actually the main characters that you spend most time with and, like, the protagonists, the most sympathetic characters, are the robbers.
Yes, the two crooks, Rob Delaney and
Kimmy Schmidt.
Kimmy Schmidt. I'm sorry, I can't recall her real name at this point.
But, like, it's kind of like, oh, this is interesting, but, like, but also, no, like, it's not working. And because they spent so much time with them, which, you know, like, I'd rather spend more time with them than the kid, because he's fucking terrible. But then the beats that they're trying to hit from original Home Alone, with the kid left at home and the mum trying to get back, none of that fucking lands, because they're not in it.
They're barely in it. I think we maybe have three scenes total with the main kid's mum.
Yeah.
Three scenes total. That includes at the beginning, where it's like, hello, this is normal family life.
Yeah.
Then we have one scene where she's... we don't even get the scene where she realizes he's missing. The
classic, that happens off camera.
Kevin! You know, that slap in your face. Kevin! We don't have that. We see her, everything's fine. Then they go off without the kid. I know we're jumping ahead a little bit here, guys. But the next time we see her, she has already realized he's home alone. She's already got a flight back. She's on her way to... She's at the airport, yeah, about to board the plane.
Yeah.
And then we don't see her again until she's home and everything's fine.
But also, when she gets home, you know, skipping to the fucking end...
Please do.
They've already spoken on the phone. And he's like, oh, my mom, I spoke to my mom. She was at the airport. She cried happy tears. Like, cool. I mean, you know, like they always say, tell, don't show. Like, what the, you know, like...
It's, that's the number one
right,
rule.
Like, it's like all those fucking beats are not there. And it's quite baffling. Because, like, this, you know, there are also things in this where it's trying to link it in loosely with the original film and people say similar lines and all of that shit. But, like, the fundamental... The small emotional core of the original Home Alone isn't there, and what they've replaced it with like the robbers, also doesn't work. So you're like, well, let's start at the beginning.
And all I'm going to, I don't want to start on a sour note, Tom, because I'm so delighted to be back in the hot seat with you, staring you down, staring into your little, your, like a doll's eyes.
Right.
Tiny little haunted eyes, like a doll's eyes. I'm so delighted to be doing this. I really want to start on a positive note. And so the most positive note that I can think of to say is that if you removed all concept of Home Alone from this script and remade it without trying to make it a Home Alone movie, without having that baggage hanging over it, it probably could be made as a much better film than what we had. There's an underlying scaffolding here.
Yeah.
That could be really good.
So, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I want to try and find wherever the positives are. You know, if you're for some reason coming to the Bitter End podcast at this point for the first time, we try not, you know, we'll talk some shit about some films, but we also want to try and sort of like, you know, bad films can still be good films. There's still, there's still, you know, there's still fun to be had. There's still things to enjoy. With this, not that much, but like, let's have a look.
So
we open with a home viewing, right?
Yeah.
There's an open house because Jeff and Pam, Rob Delaney and Kimmy Schmidt, are selling their house at Christmas time because this is, which I've realised watching a bunch of Christmas films this year, the it's our last Christmas in the house film is a trope, right? There's a load of films that I've seen where it's kind of like, for one reason or another, someone's got to sell the house, someone's got to move. People are getting divorced and it's like, it's the last time we're going to be together in the house at Christmas. So we've got to make this special.
And their real estate agent is Gavin, who's played by Keenan from Keenan and Kel. He is one of the absolute saving graces of the movie. He's so good.
MVP. Like, like he's not in it a lot.
He's really, really funny. And they're trying to sell the house. And Rob Delaney keeps like accidentally sabotaging the sales.
Because he's just very awkward.
He's
right. So the whole thing is like, he's very awkward and Rob Delaney-ish, and Kimmy Schmidt is very Kimmy Schmidt, kind of like a bit manic, verges on being crazy, and that should be fine, but it never quite lands.
No.
And I think maybe the thing that, and this kind of comes up more as they get into all the capering, is it doesn't really feel like they like each other very much. There's not really a chemistry between them in a comedic sense that's very strong, but there isn't really a chemistry between them where you're kind of like, oh, I care about this couple.
I care about them individually at separate moments.
But not as a unit. They don't have that kind of, I think you had more of that in like fucking Home Alone 4 with what was it? It was like Marv.
And Mrs. Marv.
Marv and Mrs. Marv.
Yes, so there is a bit of pressure on them because Rob Delaney, who's playing Jeff, he is a data migration manager and the coming of the cloud has ruined his career. He's lost his job. They can't afford to stay in the house. So they have to sell it. And that would be kind of fine. You know, they don't really want to, but they're going to have to. And at this point already, we're starting to get pulled in a couple of different directions because suddenly, well, just as we're starting to care about this one family, even just a tiny bit, we're torn away to another family we can't possibly care about, Tom.
No.
It is impossible to care about Max Mercer, who is our Kevin McAllister surrogate. He's our little boy. He's inexplicably English. His mum is Aisling Bea, doing a pretty good English accent.
But they've given her nothing funny to do.
No.
I do not know why you would get this like woman who's very funny to be like, can you play it mostly straight?
And they're driving along and they're just in the neighborhood. They're driving along and little Max Mercer, he needs to piss, right?
Big now, Fuller vibes, right?
Big Fuller vibes, except he's that anti-Fuller because Fuller would just piss himself and love it, right?
He loves that.
That's what Fuller does.
Because he's full of piss.
He's full of piss, as we all know. But no,
he's like, I'm to the max with piss, and I must evacuate said piss. And then for some reason,
they
Ashlyn
stop
B
at the open
is like,
house to piss.
Yeah, they're like, there's nowhere for us to piss right now. Because they're like, oh, you can't go. He's like, why didn't you go to the bathroom at the restaurant? It's like, because my uncle, Chris Parnell, who was in this film for all of a scene, and then he's heard behind a door. He's like, why is this film putting like people like Chris Parnell in and then just like having them do nothing? He's like, he ate all these deviled eggs and did a big shit. And it's like, oh yeah, you don't wanna go in after that. We have to like pretend we're buying a house so that you can take a piss. Just pull up at the side of the road and let the 10-year-old piss by a lamppost. I guess the film needs to happen.
It's snowing. Right? Like, you can piss in snow. That's like a fun rite of passage as a child is pissing in snow.
But the film needs to happen, which is why everything in this film happens. So they go, he does a piss and he has a chat with Jeff. They do the whole, like, you look like, because Rob Delaney's very big, and they go like, you look like Frankenstein. Well, actually, Frankenstein was a scientist. Oh, you know, we do that.
Kids love those jokes.
Yeah, the kids love those jokes. And then there's this whole bit where, big plot point, Jeff has a box of ugly vintage dolls that used to belong to his grandma.
Yeah.
And one is like this German boy with an upside down face. And Ashlyn B shows up and goes, oh, I saw that on Antiques Roadshow. They're meant to be really expensive or something.
They're valuable now.
They're valuable. And then so Rob Delaney's like, oh, well, this could be good for us because, you know, like maybe if I sell this doll, that will solve all of my money troubles because apparently they're super, super valuable. And then he makes some awkward gags with Max.
Can I talk about, I wrote down one of these gags.
Yeah, please.
I want the listeners to get a vibe of like the level of chat that we're getting from our Kevin McAllister in this. Rob Delaney's talking about his dolls. And Max Mercer, the little kid, goes, oh, I get it. You're one of those guys. And then Rob Delaney says, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And Max says, I don't know. You tell me. Now, it is delivered with all of the kind of panache of a joke.
I think the thing is, like,
is that a joke, Tom?
No, not really. It's trying to do Kevin McAllister-y-ish stuff. And I think, like, Kevin McAllister is still a punchable little fuck, right? Like, he's annoying as shit. And all of it, you know, especially as a grown-up, watching him do his zingers when we watch these films back in the misty sands of time, like, they weren't funny and you hated him. But I didn't hate him as much as I hate this kid, right? I'd be interested whether or not this would resonate with a kid, because I watched the first two Home Alones with my eldest kid, with my daughter, and she watched them. She fucking loved them.
Great.
Right? Like, in a way that I physically can't anymore.
No.
Because I'm too...
dead inside.
Old and dead inside. Yeah, but I still don't think this kid don't got that sauce.
He don't got that sauce. What sort of a comeback is... I don't know, you tell me. Now, I know he didn't write it, but I feel like Macaulay Culkin could have delivered that line in a way that would have gotten a reaction.
Exactly. The thing is, though, like, you don't make the film unless you know you've got the kid.
And the thing surely is, I suspect they realise they don't have the kid.
And that's why he's hardly in it.
Because, listeners, we barely see this kid. The kid who is titularly Home Sweet Home Alone. We barely see him. In fact, Tom, I posit to you that the suite that has been added to the title, the Sweet Home, it's not even his home, is it?
No,
Rob Delaney and Kimmy Schmidt's house.
I mean, I also wonder if, like, because this got disrupted by COVID, if it, like, you know, there was like a stop in production, they're like, oh, this isn't working, or like people weren't available, which is why there are these missing chunks where, you know, with like the mum, like, not it's just bad writing. I can't tell if it's like scrambling to fix something or this was fucked from the beginning.
It is about this point in my notes where I'm sort of getting back into the feel of like what this is like to be doing this podcast with Tom, settling in to watch one of these movies. And here I've written down, I remember this feeling. I think we're in for a slog.
And we were. It was only like 90 minutes, but it sucked. Anyway, we then get a repeat of a bunch of like Home Alone shit. Max's family are going to Japan for Christmas for no apparent reason.
Christmas in Japan.
They want to go and get that sweet KFC that you've got to get when you're in Japan. But like in the first one, they were going to Paris because they had family in Paris. You know, there was a reason. They were just like, arbitrarily, we're going to Japan. And there's loads of family in the house. Everything is chaos. And it's pretty much like plays out like the first film does, where Max is being a prick. And his mum shouts at him because he's being a prick and she's trying to sort out things where, like, they're on two separate flights.
How did this happen? Yeah. She's on the phone with, I guess, a travel agent. Yeah. And she's saying...
It's 2021. Who's using a travel agent?
Exactly. And she's saying, "You listen here, you've booked me on a different flight.
Try getting someone on the phone in 2021. Right?
But, like, what are the mechanics of her getting booked on a different flight to her children? How has that occurred?
Because the film has to happen. So she shouts at Max and he's like, "I wish I..." He's like, she's like, "You're not the only person in the house." And he's like, "I wish I was the only person in the house, because that's a close enough thing to what was in the first film." Then he goes and watches Looney Tunes cartoons in the back of his car and falls asleep in the back of the car.
This is the entirety of the mechanic of them losing him. It's just that he fell asleep in the back of the car.
And no one looked for him.
That, I wouldn't. He's like a little James Corden. I'm glad he's gone.
You're not wrong. But it's also like, it is also a thing of like, he's 10. You didn't check on him once. Even though there's loads of people and all this stuff, that is still classic bad parenting.
It's pretty bad. I mean, she's going on a different flight, apparently.
Yeah.
The dad is Andy Daly, by the way, played by the great Andy Daly, the fabulous comedic actor.
He's barely in it.
He has one line, which is, "Oh, I stepped on some Legos." And then he never speaks the rest of the film. The scene where Max gets left home alone, where the family leave without him, all of the dialogue is Pete Holmes, who's playing his uncle, not his dad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because the dad is, they're like, he's already at the airport trying to get a ticket or something. So it just feels, there's weird chunks and it's like, where is this person? Why is Chris Parnell just in the toilet? Like, it just feels like there was like some sort of, oh no, this is fucked and we had to fix it in reshoots or something, or like people weren't available because of COVID, like moving everyone's schedules. Whatever. I don't know. But like, so the machinations for how things get going is that Jeff thinks that Max has stolen the expensive doll.
Yes. So Jeff, aka Rob Delaney. Can we just call him Rob Delaney?
We can call him Rob Delaney.
It's much easier. The family go to fucking Japan. Good riddance to him. Max is at home. He's asleep. And Rob Delaney goes to... Rob Delaney's brother turns up for Christmas, who's played by that dude from Veep that's quite good. The really tall dude from Veep.
Weird face.
Tall dude with a weird face. He's always good value. He's good value in this too. He's one of the shining stars. Anyway, he turns up for Christmas. He's really rich.
Yeah.
He's really rich and showy. And Rob Delaney's like freaking out about his own personal finances. He goes on eBay and he figures out that his mum's doll with the fucked up upside down face is listed on eBay for $200,000. Tom, I'm going to posit two more questions for you.
Yes.
Here. Number one, do you sell items that valuable on eBay? Surely that's like a Sotheby's.
Take it to an auction house, right?
Like a famous auction house.
Although that's it, I would believe that this character would do that,
true.
Right?
And the other thing is, just because it's listed on eBay for that price does not mean it's going to sell for that
price. When it was actually listed, oh, it's been on there for 50. Yeah, because he's like, I've got one of those. There's already one on eBay and no one's bought it.
Yeah.
It does say there's only like 10 in the world.
Maybe he'll put it up for like $1 cheaper than that one. And
There you go. Bingo bango. He's got that big money.
But he's like, oh, I got to sell the doll. Goes to look for it, can't find it. And decides that little James Corden obviously stole it. He goes around to the house to try and look for him and be like, he's got to be there. He looks through the window. He sees little James Corden's jacket hanging on a chair
with a bulge in the pocket,
and decides with his with the certainty of a blood oath that object in the pocket yeah. is his fucked up doll.
He also figures out where the key is and what the alarm is, because the family think that he's like a fucking Uber driver, and they're you know, they're doing that, like, we're in a hurry, we're trying to be like the McAllisters, we're rushing and we're just telling everyone our personal information or whatever.
Yeah, they're like, what's the code for the alarm again?
And then it's 1112 and I'll put the key really obviously under the plant pot. And so he's like, well, this would be easy enough to sneak in and pinch. But he doesn't, because a police car drives by.
Except he thinks it's a police car, but it's really not. It's just a car that's got a blue suitcase and a red suitcase on top instead of lights. And it goes by that. While a dog is howling and he thinks it's a siren.
Right, yeah. Okay, fucking hell. And then where are we at this point? We're like the family...
Well, we don't see them again until the fucking halfway point.
No, yeah, like the family.
This is where we get our first montage of Max being home alone. I dare say our only real, like, kid wish fulfillment montage. It goes pretty hard. We see him wake up. He's like, Mom, Dad, you're gone. Okay. Well, I guess I'm home alone. Then we get a montage that ends in a Scarface gag.
Yep.
With him putting a bunch of M&Ms on a table and snorting them.
Yep, okay.
We also...
It's funnier the way you tell it than it was.
Trust me. And I know it's not very funny the way I tell it. It's still funnier. We also get a hilarious gag where he puts on a dress.
He puts on one of his... Yeah, he puts on some clothes.
But it can't be his mum's dress because it fits him.
Yeah, and then he puts on one of his dad's suits and he looks like Harry Hill. And then... there's also... It's fucking... Aside from the Scarface with snacks thing, it's pretty weak sauce. Kind of like the original one is kind of, it's all quite tame, like, because he's like, what's he going to do? He's going to play with Lego. He's going to play with Matchbox, like Hot Wheels cars.
Yes.
He's going to play his PlayStation, which he...
These are things he would probably do anyway.
But he just does it in a messier, bigger way. And, yeah. You know, and then he surfs down the stairs on an ironing board. Also, just, there's a lot of Lego in this. And I don't know who is listening to this in America. But the plural of Lego is Lego. Stop saying Legos, America. I cannot stress this enough.
It's very important, please. I pray that this message reaches you in time.
This is the public service announcement part of the podcast. It's not Legos. Okay. Anyway.
This message brought to you on behalf of the country of Denmark.
Yeah. Anyway, at this point, I've written a note saying, this film has no pace.
It's got no pace.
Like I was saying, like, the script is not unserviceable, but the performances are just really fucking off for literally everybody.
Well, every single exchange, at the end of every sort of pair of lines, there's like a little beat where they just sort of look off camera to be like, was that all right?
Do we do it again? Yeah. Or some of them are thinking like, that's where the laugh would be.
And that's why they wrap up conversations with lines like, oh no, you tell me.
Yeah.
Like, that's a punchline.
Or they're going to be like, okay. Or it's where they kind of like just do that inward sigh. They go, oh, fucking hell, what's the next line?
Oh my God, yeah.
Where they feel defeated. They just kind of like, they do a line and go like, oh God, I just had to fucking say that. Anyway, on to the next, yeah.
There's a recurring motif with this, with all characters, the adults and the kids included, responding to everything that happens by going, really? So, for example, they'll step on on some Lego in bare feet, and then they'll go, "Ugh, Lego, really?"
Yeah.
Or they'll like fall onto a statue, and they'll go, "Oh, a statue, really?"
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like the equivalent of like a wacky thing happening in like a Marvel movie or something, as people are going, "Well, that just happened." It's that kind of equivalent. Like, well, what do we put in? And it's just like the same fucking thing, and just like, scenes end in such a wet kind of way. Like, you know, like, if you're doing this kind of film, you want to end with a strong gag.
Yeah.
Or you're ending with something that is moving the plot forward or building some sort of tension, right? You know, something that's driving you to the next scene.
At the very least, whack Joe Pesci in the balls.
Exactly. Well, that's what I mean. Like, you do it. But, like, anytime a scene ends with a gag, it's like... It's like when they're riffing and they're doing ad libs, but it's just kind of like, oh, okay, that was a marginally funny line, but it's not a thigh slapper. Or the scenes just end because, like, we should go to there. Scene ends. Like, okay,
you know what this
there's
movie...
Nothing. There's
you
nothing there.
You know what this movie could have done with?
Hmm?
A scene where somebody, and I'm not even saying Max, our little boy, because I want less of him in this, not more, but a scene where somebody goes and tries to buy a toothbrush.
And I... Man.
Wouldn't that be a lovely palate cleansing toothbrush scene?
I never thought I would agree with such a thing, but yeah, like, it's got none of the... So that scene, you know, with the Lego and all the Scarface, that's the extent of, like, pretty much of him being home alone. We then have...
Oh, there's no consequences for him being home alone. Like, everything bad that happens to him would have also happened if his parents were there, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get to it, but, like, the fact that he is home alone does not play into the plot even remotely.
So a few things that happen. Like, we get... So Rob Delaney and Kimmy Schmidt decide that they're going to go, like, he tells Kimmy Schmidt all about the expensive doll and, like, where it is. And she's like, well, we need to go and get it. They go and try and break in. That's when they discover that Max is in the house. Then they rush out and they meet Buzz.
The real, well, right? So it's played by Devin Rattray, who plays Buzz from the first two movies. He's now grown up and he's a cop because of course he is.
Fucking ACAB. Yeah, right. You know, like... What a terrible person to become a cop, this absolute fucking psychopath. And we get, this is where we get a little bit of Home Alone lore, where, like, it later comes out that, like, when the, you know, you had to have a reason in the first one, where, like, why the cops didn't, they went round and then they're like, oh, it was a false alarm. In this, Buzz, like, some of the, cops be like, you need to go and check on this house. And he's like, I've already been there, it was a false alarm. My brother Kevin calls in one of these every year to fuck with me. Right?
Yeah, and there's this also weird coincidence. He also, hat on a hat, he says, oh, and I also noticed that the home is protected by McAllister branded security. Now, that wouldn't be just a coincidence, would it? So it's obviously like part of my brother's joke, but like...
But it is a coincidence.
But it is a coincidence, but also what? So... What does he think his brother's done? Just, like, driven around until he randomly found a house that happened to have a security company that happens to have their same shared last name?
No, I think that maybe what the thing is that the, like, that to take... I took from that Kevin runs that company.
Oh.
That's why Kevin called him to, would call him out to that house because
oh, so Kevin does, that's what Kevin's grown
I'm
up to
taking
do.
It that Kevin's grown up because he knows how to do a booby trap, right?
Okay.
But actually all he knows how to do is put in an alarm system. Anyway, that's
very
all,
muddy.
That's all the addition to
this
the McAllister
lore. This
is what
I'm talking about when I say that this movie does not need Home Alone. Like, if you take
it
all
doesn't.
The Home Alone shit out and
okay, other Home Alone shit. There is an Angels with Dirty Faces joke. You know, the Merry...
Keep the change, you filthy animal.
And it's basically the family is sitting around watching what looks like Star Trek, basically.
Yeah.
But they're doing the same lines from that. And then the brother, Rob Delaney's, like, rich douchebag brother is like, ugh, remakes. Why do people even bother? They're never as good as the original. And that is a joke that people need to stop putting in remakes.
Yeah.
To, you know, the self-awareness isn't funny. And it also, it's like, yeah, it's not. It's like, you know, because you call attention to it, that doesn't excuse you from making an inferior product that you shouldn't have made in the first place, right?
It's around this point that we get... as close as this movie gets to the Kevin has to buy a toothbrush scene. And it's when he realizes that he's home alone. So what he does, folks, is he goes to church.
For no reason.
On Christmas Eve. And he sees that there is a charity drive where people are piling up toys that are going to be given out to the needy. Because he wants the toys. And he just starts trying to take the toys.
Yeah.
And... A, he sucks. That sucks. That's a shitty thing to do. B, he's got loads of toys. We've already seen him playing with loads of toys. He doesn't need food. He doesn't need, like, to keep the heat on. He doesn't need any of that. No, he just wants more toys. this nice old lady is like, those aren't for you, actually. And then they have a little heart-to-heart, and we think, oh, is this going to be like our pigeon lady? Is this going to be...
Shovel man.
Is this where the heart is? No, she just ends up giving him a toy for no reason, yeah, which just to get rid of him.
Yeah, which he then uses to shoot Rob Delaney in the face later on in the movie.
This is where I wrote down in my notes that in the 4 years since we've been doing this, I think my bad movie endurance muscles have atrophied.
Right.
I can't.
The thing is, man, you're out of shape.
Yeah.
Right? This is like a Rocky kind of thing where it's like, man, you got soft. You need to.
Had we watched this as part of the TOS, as part of the original series of HA, then maybe it wouldn't have hit quite as hard. I think the 4 year wait.
You don't want to come in on this dry. You know, it's not. It's not the one. We have that scene at the church, but also Rob Delaney and his family at the church, and there's more of this whole stuff. Like, they've got an offer at the house from Keenan and Kel, and they're like worrying.
Oh, and it's a generous offer. They're like, the generous offer is here. You're going to sell your house. Good news, unemployed family. You're going to sell your house for a generous amount of money. This is the stakes of the movie, right? This is what is at stake, and this is a fundamental flaw. The bad thing that's going to happen is that they will sell their house for a lot of money when they need it.
Yeah.
That's the bad thing.
And then they'll move to maybe like not as good house, but Kimmy Schmidt's still working. The other thing is like the reason it doesn't really land is like, yeah, we don't like them as a couple. Their kids are barely in it. They run out of their daughter singing in the choir, right, like Shovel Man's niece or granddaughter did or whatever. And like later on, they look at a video of it that the brother sends and they're like, oh, it's like, that's the extent of the family togetherness. Like they're like, this is going to be our last Christmas in the house. Let's make it special. But there's no that kind of like earnestness of like, you know, the family at Christmas and caring about the family being in that house. Who cares?
And it means nothing, exactly, because they spend Christmas Eve plotting the big heist to get the doll back. And there is no moment, which this really feels like it should be building up to, where they go, what are we doing? Why are we out of the house on Christmas Eve?
We should be in the bosom of our family.
Making it the most special Christmas of all. That's where fucking John Hughes, Christopher Columbus, that's where those movies would take it.
Exactly.
And this does not. This takes it to, we get the first montage of them trying to break into the house. It's a bit of physical comedy with them, with Rob Delaney and Kimmy Schmidt trying to climb over a wall.
He does a big fart in her face.
It's top drawer stuff.
Every time they fall over, they do it in slow motion because it's set to very dramatic choral music to parallel with the church service. But that takes all the teeth out of the pratfalls.
A dude falling in slow motion is not as funny as just boom,
crack.
It's just not.
Yeah.
It just isn't. And we also, oh God.
So for me, this whole bit, kind of got like the funniest joke for me in the film is that you go through this terrible trying to climb a wall sequence, and then Kimmy Schmidt, like Rob Delaney, finally gets over the wall, and then she's like, oh, there's a gate. Okay, womp, a bit of a womp womp.
But the kisser on that is they go, a gate? Really?
Yeah.
A believable thing for them.
A believable thing. And then they go and sneak into the house, and it's the wrong house. There's just like a whole other family in there, which I thought, like, okay, that was quite funny.
It's funny because the other family don't notice that they've just walked in.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all wrapped up in their own doing Christmas stuff. And so suddenly Rob Delaney and Kimmy Schmidt are just standing watching them.
Yeah.
Unobserved, and they silently back out.
And then there's like the most haunting bit of the film when they're like walking back across the lawn, be like, oh God, it's next door or whatever. And like they're walking on the snow, and then the snow sinks. And then you realise that they're standing on a swimming pool with one of those plastic pool covers.
I was so scared of this when I was a kid.
Yes, me too. This is the thing you were warned about. It's like, do not go on the fucking covered pool, because that's just like you being sealed in a fucking plastic bag and you'll die.
Yeah, this is the movie's first fatality for sure.
Yeah, that would have been a kill. And they get out of there, and then they go and whisper outside of Max's house, and Max hears everything they're saying. And the whole thing is basically a misunderstanding that every time Max overhears them, he thinks that they want to kidnap him and sell him. Whereas they're like, oh, we want to get the doll back and sell it. And it's a whole big, womp, womp. This would have all been solved with a conversation. Anyway, so they're like, we'll come back on Christmas Eve. Rob Delaney will dress as Father Christmas for some reason, just because, I don't know, it'll look good on a poster. And then we get the tooling up montage, right?
Yeah, and in the tooling up montage, we see him spray some water around to make things icy. We see him buttering the stairs. I quite enjoyed that. He rubs the stairs down with butter.
He puts Lego everywhere.
He smashes up some Lego, throws that around, and then he makes an extra spicy chocolate sauce with a hot sauce called Satan's Hiney.
Okay, yeah, pretty good.
That's not too bad.
And then it's like, right, okay, it's time to do a Home Alone, I guess.
We're going to do a Home Alone, guys.
And so the first thing that happens is the burglars, they're driving up to the house in their car, because obviously if you're doing a burglary, just park right outside the front. That's fine. And you see this whole thing of Max spraying water all over the road. He's done, they live in like a cul-de-sac, right? Like in this like gated little community. It looks like he's done the whole street. So they just fucking skid into a lamppost and total the car. But it's kind of like, what about all the other people that live? It's not like in Home Alone 1 where like everyone in the neighborhood's gone away on holiday inexplicably when they already have huge houses that would be perfect for hosting Christmas. He's going to have killed some other people, right?
He's a kid that takes the shortcuts. By now, by the time he's grown up a little bit more, he's totally gone like all in on AI. He's one of these AI guys,
oh, he's
right?
Absolutely a fucking AI.
He likes
AI
the shortcuts.
Guy.
He likes
but
the
he
spray
spends
and break.
All his time talking to fucking the home Siri. Be like, oh, give me ideas for booby traps. And there's like parental controls say you can't access anything with boobies. Okay, womp. But yeah, he'd definitely be a fucking AI guy. He'd be like sharing like all these. Another thing that's gotten worse since we did this fucking podcast. Fucking hell. Anyway, we're doing a big Home Alone now. Everyone's going to get hurt.
This is where I start to feel like, okay, maybe things are going to be looking up. So we got Kimmy Schmidt, we've got Rob Delaney, we've got an extended sequence of them going through the mousetrap maze of all of these traps that have been set up. So, this is going to be good, isn't it, Tom?
Yeah, moderately. So hit the beat. So we've got the ice. We get the thing that you had in the original films of like them slipping on the ice and falling on their bottoms. Ouchie. They split off, right? They split off. Rob Delaney finds cookies on the door, on the front step for Santa. Come on, mate. That's a fucking red flag. Who's leaving them on the front step? And he eats the cookie with the hot sauce, with the Satan's Hiney. And he's like, hot. Okay.
I mean, he has a bad time, but nothing bad.
He has a bad time. Nothing bad happens. But we're building up. We're building up to the pain. So, okay.
And Kimmy Schmidt, her feet get set on fire.
Yeah. After she gets a load of, you know, fucking like 4-liter bottles of Diet Coke thrown at her.
Yeah.
Like, that's a whole set. It's like, all she is sticky now. Yeah. Like, it's not hurting her.
Like there's a big long sequence of these big heavy bottles of Diet Coke being thrown down. Every single one lands near her and then sprays on her. Now, guys, I'm so sorry that you've literally never seen any physical comedy before, but it's so obvious. The bottle, go on at the head.
Yeah.
You hit her in the head with the bottle. That's funny. Tom's laughing right now, guys. Picture it in your mind. I'm
like
sure you'll be
have
laughing
it, too. It breaks her nose, right?
Not even saying she needs to get hurt that bad, but it's just, it needs to be a bonk on the noggin. A bonk on the noggin is funny. Every single one of these bottles lands near her and then sprays her.
I wondered about this, like the level of violence, because there is some violence in this. It is not as, you know, like the body count is not as high as the other Home Alone films. And I wonder if it's because it's the time that these were made, that in terms of like the violence that you can get away with in a PG family movie like this is significantly less than what you could do in the 80s, right?
Yeah, but they're still making O.J. Simpson jokes.
They're still making O.J. Simpson. But that's one for the parents. But like, it's... in terms of like physical, you know, it's also, it's like, it's Disney, and like Disney are very like careful about, you know, it's like imitable behavior and like all this kind of, you know, like it's, I just feel there's something that where this is slightly watered down. And I wonder if that is a combination of the nature of family films now. You know, family films in the 80s and 90s were more violent, more scary, more weird. And also that it's like Disney maybe being quite cautious. They're just putting, you know, this is going out and streaming. Like, that's not, you know, we're not taking big risks. So how about instead of a brick, it's a bottle of Coca-Cola and it bops are on the bottom rather than in the face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know exactly what you mean. It does feel overly cautious. I do.
She gets her feet set on fire. You know, that's okay.
I do think there is another important part of the equation that's askew here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for this kind of physical comedy to work, the equation is you need a gangly guy.
Yeah.
And a short guy.
And you need little Joey Fishes.
And you need little Joey Fishes. You need a gangly, big, tall beanpole.
Let's call him
Daniel Stern. You could say, for example. What we have here is Kimmy Schmidt. She's kind of doing the heavy lifting of both those parts because she is the more kind of gangly. She moves in a gangly way, but she's also the shorter and more like of the two. She does all of the
she's got more swearing. She does the manic face. She's a bit more crazy.
And what we have her trying to do both of those parts, and then we have Rob Delaney, who is big, wide, and moves the way that I do as a 42-year-old man, which is that if I'm sitting in a chair right now, guys, and if I try and get up out of this chair, I won't be able to do it without going, ooh.
You're
gonna
make a big sexy noise.
And that's how he moves when he's falling over. That's how he moves at all times. He can't, he has none of the, that, those fun noises that Daniel Stern makes and the little grumbling and the it's just Roadrunner rules. It needs to be these two silhouettes.
Yeah.
You need these very important cartoon silhouettes that they do not have.
Yeah.
And Kimmy Schmidt is doing, she's carrying this.
She's doing a lot of heavy lifting. Yeah.
She's 100% the funnier.
She's got the funny hair, like after the Coca-Cola and the fire, hair is all crazy.
Yeah. Her feet are all burned, so her shoes have peeled off and she's walking around barefoot.
In Lego. And like Rob Delaney gets shot in the face with a pool ball. And like he does, to be fair, get a horrifically big lump on his head.
But it's not as funny because I just kind of feel bad for him.
Okay, so this is the interesting thing about this is making the robbers more sympathetic in the main characters. But then you do feel bad because you don't have that. You're not rooting for Max because A, he sucks. B, he's barely in the film, so we haven't gotten to know him as a character and to root for him in that way. And then, like, he's the villain in it, you know, because, like, the, you know, these are people who are just trying to do what is right for their family.
Ostensibly, so you just feel bad for him. We're supposed to believe at this point that Max has stolen the doll. Like, big surprise, it turns out he has not. But as far as the audience is concerned, we're supposed to think he has. So he is the villain.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of fucked up, right? Like, because, yeah, they don't reveal that he, spoilers, he hasn't stolen the doll. That comes out much later on. So, yeah, at this point, it's kind of like, oh, these poor fuckers. And, you know, like, they get more angry, but they never get to that point of razzum-frazzum, I'm going to murder you.
Yeah.
Right?
Because they're not bad. They're not bad people.
They're not bad. We know it's all the misunderstanding. It's all the womp-womp. It's like, you know, we know that, like, they're not going to sell him, right? They're not going to sell him into slavery. And you don't have the thing with, like, the wet bandits. That, like, you genuinely believe by the end of that, they're going to murder him.
Yeah. The worst thing that's going to happen here is, oh, no, they will have to accept a very generous offer on their property.
Yeah. Or you're kind of, like, worried that, like, oh, no, what if Kevin, Max, whatever his name, like, he calls the police and then these guys go to prison.
Well, if he calls the police, they'll say, he stole our fucking doll.
Yeah.
Give us the doll back.
But then the doll's not there.
And then they go, oh, I'm sorry, it was a misunderstanding. Yeah,
but, like, it's there's things missing, you know? Like, they've tried to do something slightly, an interesting take on it, which I can appreciate, but, like, it's removed things that are fundamental to make it work.
And it ends in this big sort of climax in the foyer. They barely get into the house, by the way. As soon as they walk in the front door,
okay, so the worst,
this
sorry,
whole sequence is
the
over.
The worst thing that happens in this film is Rob Delaney gets shot in the face with the pool ball. He blacks out for a minute. And then Max jumps down and puts one of his cousins or brothers or whatever, puts a VR headset on him. And Rob Delaney thinks that he is standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon. And he's like, what's this? What's happening? Oh, my God. Is this death? Like, he thinks he's passed over to the other side. But it's like, and he looks down at himself in the VR headset. And he can see his hands, his wedding ring, the Santa Claus outfit he's wearing. It's like, not how VR works.
A VR eagle flies by and he hears it, despite the fact that in the wide shots we can clearly see he's not wearing any headphones. How is that audio working? This guy's meant to be a computer engineer.
He does have a brain bleed, is the only way that you could explain it. But like, it feels like, you know, he'd be like, oh my God, I've probably got a brain bleed. Actually, that is a joke later on in the film. Like, at the very end, he's like, oh, I don't have any long-term neurological damage. Whatever. This is after they've toasted to Max for bringing, you know, for being like the hero of the story. Anyway, that was abysmal.
It was fucked, man.
But then it all comes out. The womp womp comes out. He's like, you're not going to sell me. It's like, sell you? No, we just wanted the doll back. He's like, I don't have a doll. I've got a can of Coke that I took from your house.
Yeah.
And it's like, and they all go like, oh, are you home? And she's like, I'm home. Where are your parents? I'm home alone. And then suddenly, because they're parents and they're not villains, they're like, oh,
and then they take him under their wing.
Sweetie, we'll take you home and you can reconnect with your mum off camera.
Don't worry, we'll phone her up off camera. There's a scene later on where they say, well, they point out what an emotional scene it was. Oh, yeah, when we phoned her up.
She cried.
Don't worry, though, you didn't have to watch that nice bit of acting that Aisling Bea definitely could have probably done.
Yeah. No, fuck it. No, it was COVID. She couldn't do it.
Do you think they filmed that scene and just cut it?
Maybe to just get it down to 90 minutes.
I don't think they even filmed it, because otherwise why is there the line in it where they explain what happened?
Right, yeah. It's probably rewrites
and reshoots.
If they
filmed it, they would have just shown it.
Yeah, yeah. So now we're getting to the point where it's kind of, well, where's the doll, right?
Where's the doll, Tom?
So where is
it? Oh, no, you tell me. There we go, that's my funny zinger.
Really?
Oh, really?
So we kind of like clocked this whole thing of like kind of like, oh, he's not going to have the doll, is he? So where is the doll?
Well, it's obvious, Tom. Tom completely called it. Of course, Rob Delaney's rich brother has stolen the doll because he's not really rich. He's just a thief. He's a con man. He's come into the house to take their mother's, because they've got the same mum. He obviously knows about the doll.
He's taking the doll because he's flashy. He's got all the presents. He's like, oh, I didn't realise. No, it's just the brother's dickhead son
has been playing with it.
Who has been playing with it. And it's like, this kid's been in like two scenes?
We barely know who he is.
He's had like 2 minutes. He's done, and they're like, oh, he's got it. And then he throws the doll and from the top of the stairs, and there's this big slow motion thing of them all trying to stop the doll from breaking. And it's like, oh,
that's not as good as the instant obvious first reaction of the reveal. No,
yeah,
it was just somewhere else. That's all.
Then the doll, so it's like, oh, we've got the doll. And then Aisling Bea shows up and they have an emotional reunion, even though they've already had one over the phone. And then they go back to the house and they reveal that the house is absolutely fucked. And then we flash forward to one year later, which is a thing I've been like, I've watched a load of like shit, like holiday rom-coms over the Christmas season.
Have you?
Oh yeah. And this is a trope that's in like modern rom-coms. Like, you have this big thing like, oh, it's mum's new boyfriend, or it's like, it's our last Christmas in the house, or something's wrong. And everything's going to go a little bit crazy. And then we're going to cut to 1 year later and see where everyone is next Christmas and everything's great. And that's what we do in this, where Max's family are round at Rob Delaney and Kimmy Schmidt's house having a big Christmas meal.
And it looks like garbage, by the way. They serve up this meat and they literally say, looks great. That meat looks absolutely
just
fucked.
A load of beef.
No, but like that weird plastic. It looks like Play-Doh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Weird kind of like state. Yeah, it's probably CGI. Speaking of CGI, did you notice that in this film, whenever anyone's outside, they got CGI fog on their breath?
No way.
Like, because everything's filmed on a fucking soundstage. At least the original Home Alone was filmed out in Chicago in the open. Everything in this is pretty much on a soundstage. And they've gone to the level of being like, well, it's got to look cold, so we'll put the fog on the breath. And it's all CGI. And once I noticed it, like, I just couldn't stop seeing it. It's really weird. But then they were like, oh, well, we sold the doll and it paid for the mortgage on the house. It paid for
a trip to Europe, they say, for no reason.
It paid for fixing everything that we destroyed in your house, which involved like a whole chandelier falling from the ceiling. They also fixed up their home. This was on eBay, it was like $200,000, right? And I was like, then you've got nothing left? Like, what?
What about the, but don't worry because he's gotten a job now.
Your job.
The big joke being he was so angry about the cloud before when he didn't have a job. He was a data migration manager and he says that the cloud ruins everything. The big joke now.
Loves the cloud.
He works, he's got a cloud job.
He's a big cloud boy.
Do you know what? This is just really great family writing, right?
Yeah.
Really good because kids love jokes about the job market.
Yeah, right, about data migration and like
the cloud.
Yeah, yeah.
You got two kids. Do you reckon they know what the cloud
Absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? But we did our Christmas crackers and it was all just full of data migration jokes.
Jesus Christ.
And then they all toast to Max for being the one that brought them together. It's like, no, I mean, really, like, wasn't it Rob Delaney just jumping to conclusions?
If anything, he's the one that brought them together when he broke into their fucking
house. Into their house, and like everyone's fine with this. It's like, you know, it's like, haha, that was all wacky. Like, this has got none of that fucking good, the family stuff. There's no Yellow King shit in this. There's no John Candy. There's no underlying darkness to this, which I think is maybe like the biggest folly of this film.
I was desperately racking my brains to try and tease some Yellow King lore out of this. And guys, I'm not even going to try.
The only thing I can think is that the Yellow King stuff is more meta and more... The Yellow King stuff is now maybe something to do with multi-corporation mergers. You know, that this was brought together by the Yellow King driving down the stock prices of Fox and them needing to sell and Disney buying it. And the Yellow King was whispering in the ear of Bob Iger and being like, this is a good idea. We should probably make an... That's all I got.
That's
all I got. Was the Yellow King COVID disrupting the production?
Whoa.
I feel, you know, it's if anything, it's too real, the Yellow King stuff in this film. And so that's why we just should be like, look, just cut to the credits, which will have some really basic ass fucking like After Effects animations of scenes from the films in it, and just be like, let's move on with our lives. We're never gonna watch this again. Me, you, Todd Jordan, or anyone else in the world that is like, no one is watching this twice. I would watch the fucking South Africa one again.
I don't think the editor watched this one twice.
No. Like, I'd watch the fucking one with Malcolm McDowell again over the... Like, any of them. Not this. Worst one. Boo.
Boo. And I just feel bad because of all of the players but one are someone that I like.
Right. I mean, so now, where does this leave us? We've now, once again, reached the bitter end of the Home Alone franchise.
This is our second time reaching the bitter end of one franchise, or our first time reaching the bitter end of a franchise twice.
Yes, I think so. I mean, we'll do this again because the new Highlander film is coming out, which I am excited. You know, like, that can only be better than this, right? A new Highlander. And also, who thought out of all the films that we have watched that we would get a new Highlander before we got a new Friday the 13th, a new Nightmare on Elm Street?
You know what I mean? Even a new Candyman.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm very stoked for that. Do you think Home Alone will come back again?
This is a phenomenal question, Tom. And taking a leaf out of the movie's book, I kind of want to just come back and say, I don't know, you tell me.
Really?
I think it could come back again. I hope it does. Like I said, I think there were the bones of a good film there.
Yeah.
It just got mad. It just got put through the transporter from The Fly and merged with like a bad film.
And then it got worse and worse until it was just like, please shoot me.
Yeah. Got Gina Davis to shotgun it in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think the other thing is, like, I don't know. So, like, there's something that came up recently where Macaulay Culkin pitched his idea for a sequel that would get him back.
Whoa.
Like, where he's like, I'm not opposed to it if the idea is right. And I think, like, doing a new Home Alone as it is, like, the bones of a Home Alone film, it's never going to have the impact of the originals because, as we've seen, it seems like you can't replicate it in a way that will be more successful than the original. There is a lightning in a bottle with Macaulay Culkin becoming a huge superstar. Also, those films don't go to cinemas anymore. No one makes like a mid-budget comedy, and families don't turn out for that kind of film.
No.
So it's a film it's out of place. Yeah. It's out of style. So the way you do it is you do a legacy sequel, right? Where you bring back a Macaulay and you just fully leverage nostalgia. And his pitch is that he's a dad with a kid and he's not entirely present. He's like, he's like divorced, or the mum has died. And then it's like at Christmas and he gets locked out of the house. And the kid booby traps the house to try and keep his dad out. And then Macaulay is the one, like Kevin is the one trying to break in. And then the booby trapped house is a metaphor for their relationship. And he has to reconnect with his son. Right? So that's got the bones of a legacy sequel. Like, hey, do you remember this character that you really liked who was really happy? He's miserable now.
Oh, great.
Know, right? Like we do in all of these things.
No, but that sounds like it's got the trifecta that I outlined, yeah. Which is Christmas, traps, and, well, but Tom, does it have wish fulfillment? Does the kid do fun stuff
doing what Macaulay Culkin did with Ted Danson. He's getting even with Dad.
Forgot about getting even with Dad.
Everyone forgot about getting even with Dad. But like, so you would have that wish fulfillment of like, what if it's a different wish fulfillment. It's like, what if I could tell my parents off, right?
Mm.
I still don't think that's great, but it's better than what we saw. And, you know, like, because I think at this point, I don't know what you do with the franchise.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
So I wasn't expecting this for us to do like a pitch the sequel sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's just suddenly popped into my head. If you do something a little bit darker.
Yeah.
You bring back Daniel Stern.
Right? Yeah.
The beloved physical comedy actor.
Yeah. He's like an hour and avocado farmer.
Yeah. Well, maybe. And
in real life he is. I think that's what he
is. I know he's written a book recently. He's
Me and my avocado.
He served his time. He's gone straight.
Yeah.
And he's raised some kids who've now got grandkids. And he's doing his first, for some reason, I don't know, he's got to look after the grandkids on Christmas Eve. And his daughter and her husband aren't actually going to arrive until Christmas morning. Right.
Yeah.
So he's home alone with the kids, looking after the kids on Christmas Eve. He sits down in his comfy chair. And then he dies, right?
Okay.
He dies happy.
Yeah.
But the kids are suddenly home alone with granddad.
Is it like a Weekend at Bernie's?
You got it! It's Weekend at Bernie's. So what happens is that the kids don't want to ruin Christmas, so they have to try and pretend that granddad is still alive.
Yeah.
For the neighbours and stuff. So they have to puppeteer. Basically, they just want Daniel Stern to do more really fun physical comedy. And I like the idea of him doing that while also pretending to be a corpse.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. I mean, I guess, okay, if we're off the bat, just pitching our ideas, we get Macaulay back, right?
Okay.
But we do a home sweet home, like a Home Alone Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
Where Kevin is doing the classic 90s dad trope of working too hard, right? He's doing
a vague advertising job or something.
In a vague advertising job. He's doing a Hook. He's doing the Santa Claus. He's doing that other one where they do a Mrs. Doubtfire,
of course.
Even. Whatever. He's doing all of that. And he you know, his son, he's fucked up. He hasn't bought Turbo Man for his son or whatever. And then he gets visited by some ghosts from the past. So maybe he gets visited by Shovel Man, the ghost of Shovel Man from, or the Pigeon Lady from
the
other one as the ghost of Christmas past. And it's this is where you've been. This is where, how we got to this point. Maybe the ghost of Christmas present could be a Daniel Stern or a Joey Fishes who are showing up and being like, look, I've fucked up, but I've embraced the Christmas spirit. We get to see Daniel Stern being like, look at my avocados that I spend Christmas with. I love this.
Now, the ghost of Christmas present would have to surely be whoever's in the current, today in 2025, the most recent successful Christmas movie.
Right.
It would have to be someone from a Hallmark movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That I haven't watched.
Yeah, no, I mean, who knows? Who even... No, you bring it back, you're like, okay, right, we've got a Joey Fishes. We can CGI resurrect Joey Fishes. I know he's not dead.
He's not dead, baby.
He's not old, but he's so fucking... He's not dead, he's so fucking old. We do, the Irishman on him, or whatever. So that maybe Joey Fishes is the ghost of Christmas present. He's the most unlikely person to embrace Christmas. He's embraced it. And he's like, I love it. Hey, kid, you want to spend some time with your
son? Hey, kid, you want to come on in and know me better, man?
Yeah, exactly. Because then the ghost of, Christmas yet to come is maybe, Daniel Stern being like, I'm the ghost of Daniel Stern, and I'm showing you who's going to rob your house tomorrow and murder you and your son in a home invasion, and I'm going to show you all the things they're going to do. And now you can set traps. And then he's going to son, what day is it today? What, today, Dad? Today's Christmas. Shut up! We've got to do some traps in the house. And then they fucking kill everyone. And then it's Kevin McAllister knows how to keep Christmas if anyone ever in all of Chicago knew how to do it. I don't know.
Tom, I think it's got legs. I think it's got good bones.
Okay.
That is solid. I kind of want to mash it up with because it wasn't for a really long time, I think, Quentin Tarantino was talking about doing a Friday the 13th set in winter about the summer camp during the off-season, basically.
I like that.
And it would be snowy summer camp.
Yeah.
And it's someone who has to sort of do, a bit like The Shining, someone who has to be on site and look after it
during
the off-season. I think we could do a really good mashup with Home Alone.
Yeah.
Someone in a camp in Crystal Lake.
Yeah.
In the off season, and they're alone. Like a kid gets left behind after summer and stays for 6 months or something.
Yeah, no, that's good. And then just to bring everything together, to do the big legacy sequel, pulling together all of the things from the podcast, just Coffee Dog from Jaws 3 shows up and he's just like, I'm also here. Come through this portal. And then,
yeah. And then the post end credit sequence, the tall man from Phantasm says, boy.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, we'd show up for it. Probably 4 years after it came out.
Yes, listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us after such a long gap. It is a delight to be back. Wouldn't you say, Tom?
I've had a lovely time and I'm looking forward. Look, I really hope that we can do Newlander.
Newlander.
Newlander, spell N-U. Don't fuck around here. next year, I think that comes out.
I actually,
maybe this year by the time this comes out. Whenever you're listening to this, it's probably out. Who knows?
I actually didn't even know that movie was coming, so I'm quite
excited
about
that. It's in production, man.
Whoa, baby.
It's got Henry Cavill's in it.
Oh, the Cav Daddy. Yeah. Yes, I know him from Hellraiser 5.
He's an actor who I like who's never been in a particularly good film, but maybe this could be the film where he's like in a film that's good and he's good.
I actually don't think it's Hellraiser 5, it's Hellworld. I think that might be the seventh one. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. Sorry to let you down.
Nerd. I know that film. Yeah. Sorry, we got derailed by Henry Cavill trivia that we don't remember. Anyway.
But until it's then, been nice. It's been lovely to be back with you. I can't promise you that we're going to be doing a whole new season anytime soon, but we might be popping up for one or two more of these, possibly.
Look, we'd love to do it, but like we said, we're old as hell. We're basically like walking skeletons, and I have two children now, but never say never. Todd, any questions?
I don't know. You tell me.
Really?